Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Sports Time HQ. I am your host, Fernando, and today I'm joined by co-host Keith. Keith, how are you doing today?
Yeah, doing good, Fernando. Great to be on the show as usual. A bit of a different show than we're used to, but should be a good one. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, joining us today from the Fantasy Doctors, it is Dr. Jesse Morse. Jesse, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure, and we got a lot of injuries that happened last season. I think it was one of the most injuries ever in the NFL, in NFL history. Maybe you could back me up on that, Jesse?
Oh, there's always tons of injuries every year. It just continued to escalate, unfortunately, secondary to COVID and the different protocols and everything. But looking at the final data, I don't remember exactly if it was number one, but it was up there.
First up is Dak Prescott. He was the number one quarterback before his injury, and he had a gruesome injury. He had a compound fracture and dislocated his right ankle, and he just recently got hurt again in training camp, maybe about, I don't know, I think it was the first hour of padded practice, and now he was sidelined. And what do you see in this, Jesse? Do you think Dak will bounce back this season, or do you think he's going to have multiple setbacks this year?
So there's a couple things to discuss. First of all, his ankle injury was bad. And the nature of his injury actually led to multiple, at least one surgery. Probably I wouldn't be surprised if he had multiple surgeries. We never really got confirmation of that. But when you have that level of injury, coming back from it and having any side effects or any long-term issues is unfortunately very common. So I'm not ready to say he's going to come back and look like the Dak of old. And obviously his upper extremity was fine until yesterday, but more so his mobility and his immobility, or the mental part of it saying, are we ready to run, or is my ankle going to not cooperate? Do I feel good sliding in the pocket or stepping up? A lot of his game is running. We saw that in the first several games last year before he got injured. And unfortunately, he may not want to do that this year because he may think twice about his ankle. Then he suffered this upper lat injury, we call it. So it really wasn't shoulder per se. The back where the lat meets is kind of in the back here. So it basically stabilizes your shoulder. And this could be a little bit concerning, because if they rush him back too quickly, which I don't think they will because they don't really need him right now, this will continue to linger and continue to worsen, because you can't throw with that side of your body without that muscle to stabilize the back part of your shoulder. So as much as everyone wants to think that Dak's just going to bounce back and be a top five quarterback again, I'm not ready to say that. And that has a significant trickle-down effect, unfortunately.
So now, does that mean, so you're thinking that he's not going to be maybe a top five, maybe even not even top 10 quarterback now because of his running problems, and now he's going to be scared to run per se? He's not going to be that mobile quarterback we're used to seeing. He's probably not going to be averaging 31.5 points a game before his injury, I'm sure.
I mean, you could put him, I think it's fair to say he's going to be probably 8 to 12. I think that would be a fair statement. You know, I mean, think about who's in the same range, in that range, you know, Tannehill.
I was just thinking about him. He just popped up in my head.
Stafford, Lamar Jackson. Some people are higher on him, but I'd say he's still kind of lurking in that range. I mean, Brady is kind of still in that range, depending on your league settings.
Yeah.
I mean, you could even be talking about, Herbert. You know, some people think he may struggle in the second year, and some people say he may take off in the second year. So, you know, and people are like, oh, well, Dak, well, you're assuming that Dak's ankle and his mobility is going to be 100%.
Yeah.
Be careful with assumptions.
Yeah. No.
I know we're going to talk about probably Burrows, you know, soon, but in your league, Jesse, if you were stuck between Dak and Burrows, who would you be looking to take there, fancy, knowing that they're both coming off, you know, both bad injuries?
I would take Dak over Burrows. And so I was speaking to a Bengals player 2 weeks ago, I think it was. And we were talking about the facility and the way it's run and the choices that are there and the different treatment options. And some of the stuff he was telling me, I was like, what? And this guy had played for a couple teams before, and he's like, I've seen high school gyms that are better than this facility. So when I hear that type of stuff, I'm concerned about management. I'm concerned about treatments. What happened to Joe Mixon last year? Yeah. You know, like I'm concerned about a couple things that may impact or indirectly impact Burrow. You know, I'm not overly concerned about his knee per se, but he's definitely not going to run. He may get the yips. You know, we see that a lot with guys coming back from first year from ACL. They rush their progressions because they're worried about the pocket closing in on them. They didn't exactly make a really strong choice in the first round and go with Sewell, which they could have, but instead got another offensive weapon. So now they're hoping that the offensive line holds up in their upgrades. Because if not, he's going to be slinging the ball or running. I mean, he had the most or second most sacks through the games that he played before he tore his ACL. And they really didn't dramatically improve that line. So, you know?
Yeah, no, I actually, I think we were talking to Adam, right, Keith and I, and Jamar Chase, with them adding Jamar Chase, I mean, I wish they went with Penei Sewell, because that would have just been so much helpful to Joe Burrow and making sure he doesn't injure himself again. But I think having Jamar Chase there now with Thaddeus Moss, I mean, he could be projected number one tight end there soon. I mean, you're basically having your college team back, which means if you have that same type of connection, you could very well be able to throw that ball right when you get the ball like snapped to you, which could be helpful, but that could really hurt the Bengals if Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow cannot connect right away in the first NFL game.
So, I mean, my primary concern is you're putting a lot of pressure on a guy coming off of a very significant knee injury, you know, and you're like, all right, you know, I know you're coming off of a bad knee injury. We did a little bit to help your line. We gave you more weapons, but, you know, you still only have 3-4 seconds to throw the ball. And sorry if guys are collapsing in the pocket around your legs. So it's like, we'll have to see how it plays out in spring, you know, and over the preseason games and whatnot. And I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play in any. But knowing how immobile he was last year, you know, or how many times he was sacked, and then knowing that the nature of his knee injury and the fact that he might not want to move much, it just gives me a little bit of pause on his offensive weapons as well. Because obviously if he can't get through his progressions, what good is you drafting, you know, Boyd as a steal if he's not going to get hit enough because Burrow doesn't have time? You know, or if they keep handing off to Mixon because they're worried about the pocket collapsing every minute. So just things to think about. That's all.
So are you passing up on Joe Burrow in your redraft leagues?
Probably, yes.
Yeah. I mean, if Herbert's there and it's between Herbert and Burrow, we already know the situation.
Oh, I've got Herbert way higher, but I think it comes down to value to me. You know, totally agree with what Jess says there, but I think if he starts sliding and sliding and sliding, even if I got him as a second QB, I'd take that. I think take the chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about where you draft him. You know, if you're talking, if he's in like 18 or something like that, like that's a straightforward option, you know. But if he's in like 10 or 12 and you have to reach for him, that's not something I'm willing to do.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, no. So we talked about both Dak Prescott and Joe Burrow, both our quarterbacks. We're all risky on drafting them this year, especially now that Dak had a new injury and Joe Burrow coming off a torn ACL, MCL. It's hard. So we'll go into our running backs, and we're going to start out with comparing two running backs who both had the same injuries. One had it last year and one just had it recently. We'll talk about Cam Akers and Marlon Mack. Both players tore their Achilles. Mac tore it in 2020. Akers tore it just before training camp. Mac does claim that he's 100% as he enters training camp. Now, Jesse, do you think that's true?
He might feel like he's 100%, which is great news. But unfortunately, we have not seen any running backs in the past 5 years who have torn their Achilles and came back to being even remotely close to effective. We haven't seen it. Several other positions, yes. Most other positions do well. Running backs and linebackers struggle the most because of the nature of their position and the explosiveness and the repetitive explosiveness. So if he comes back and he actually looks great, wonderful. That's great. If not, it's like, that's not exactly what I like to see for Akers, because then I'm like, the data hasn't changed, the rehab hasn't changed, that type of stuff. And I'm like, that's concerning for me. So I'm not super high on Mac. He's on my do not draft list, so to speak, because I just, until someone proves to me that they can come back from this and be effective, I'm out on him.
So now, do you think if Mac does perform really well this year, if Mac does perform really well, does that mean you're going to try and get Akers next year? Or are you still going to stay away from torn Achilles running backs?
Probably still stay away, unless he's ridiculous value.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be hard for Mac to shine too. Like, he's not going back as the number one guy either, like Jonathan Taylor there. You know what I mean? How's Mac really going to prove that he's this great player, or still the same as what he was? He wasn't like one of the top running backs beforehand either, so I think it's going to be hard for him to prove to us that, yeah, we should be hanging on to Akers, or not trading him away and all the panic selling and all that there was going on initially. Like, but yeah, I think it's going to be a hard one for us fantasy players to take a chance on.
Akers has stuff going for him. He's got age on his side, he's got pedigree on his side. But at the end of the day, this is a really rough injury. I'm a data guy. I'm a science guy. So until you show me that someone's done it, it's hard to say he's going to be the first one. Mm-hmm. Like Saquon. Everyone's expecting him to be the exception, not the rule. Mm-hmm. Everybody assumes, oh, he's going to be the next Adrian Peterson and come back and go bananas. Like, that's a hard ask, and that's at the current price. That's what you're paying for. So same thing for Akers. It really just depends on his price. If he's going in the second or third round next year, no. I mean, no. If he's in the fifth or sixth round or whatever, and he's like more of a dart throw, maybe. But it's a long time away. There's a lot of journey before that, between now and then.
Yeah. Are you one that'd be selling him now, trying to get rid of, if you had him in a dynasty?
Oh, yeah. I'd take 75 cents on a dollar, whatever I could get for him. That's over. There's too many things that could go wrong between now and then, and the odds are not in his favor. Yeah. It's not him specifically, but just hypothetically looking at the data and what we know, it doesn't look good, but I wish him the best of luck. So if I had him, whatever I can get from best case scenario, I'll let them deal with the risk.
Yeah. And if there's repetition there in that data, then there's a chance of drafting him. But because there's no data in the last 5 years of any running back really throwing, being good, I mean, then there's nothing to prove. I mean, will Marlon Mack actually be able to push Jonathan Taylor? Obviously not. He could be one of those weekly dart throws where Nyheim Hines was.
You're really hoping that, or expecting Taylor to get injured. That's really kind of what, if Taylor gets injured and then Mac shines, then you're like, all right, we might have something here. But if that's not the case and he's just coming in for a random play or, filling in randomly, you're like, unless he looks really good and they decide to give him more work, he's on the bench. He's a third string guy right now, especially not regularly without this injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, well, that will bring us right into our next running back, who is a first string and will always be a first string for now anyways. That's Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey, he finished number 53 in for running backs last year. Started only three games where he put up 20 plus points. But throughout the season, he had multiple injuries that just kept happening. He had a high ankle sprain. He had a shoulder and thigh injury. McCaffrey says he's healthy and he's ready to go. And the Panthers have already mentioned that he's going to be the three down guy and he's going to be working the big load that he's always been having. Now, do you think they should more caution him versus giving him that big workload like he's used to seeing?
So McCaffrey is one of those rare genetic freak type of guys that has been able to stay really healthy his entire career. Up until this past year, through massive volume in high school, massive volume at Stanford, and then massive volume in the NFL, he's missed one game with, I think it was a groin injury. That's it. Like, that's crazy. That doesn't happen as a running back. So, like, he has just learned to know how to take care of his body. This past year, a couple things just unfortunately went the wrong way. And he, high ankle sprains are season killers. They really are. Look at Saquon two years ago, whatever it was. Kamara 2 years ago. Saquon CMC, and then Michael Thomas last year, and his was even crazier. But, you know, overall, they're just bad injuries. So you can't really blame that on him. He came back, and when he was playing, he looked like legit. It was almost like Murphy's Law. Anything that can happen will happen injury-wise last year. So you just, for me, my risk score and my concern for him that I wrote extensively about in our TFD draft guide is actually pretty low, considering someone who didn't play a whole lot of games last year. And honestly, none of those injuries overly concern me going forward. They're not like, you know, Joe Mixon's foot or Michael Thomas's ankle, which is a completely different and much worse injury. So those type of things, or Dalvin Cook's knee and his shoulder, like there's certain things that concern me way more than CMC's ankle and his shoulder and his quad and, you know, all the other knickknack stuff. Overall, I haven't seen anything that deserves for him not to be the 1-1 or, you know, whatever.
So you're definitely drafting him as an RB1.
Yes. In my opinion, he's still top three.
Okay, that's interesting. I was kind of nervous this year coming into this year with Christian McCaffrey's injury, because I know a lot of running backs, like once they're injured, sometimes they completely stay injured. But mm-hmm. I know we did see Christian McCaffrey. He came back for 1 week because he played the first two games, got injured. Then he came back 1 week and he was absolutely electric, and then he went down again. Yeah. So
when he was there, he was bananas, like legit crazy awesome. The regular CMC. So I, unfortunately, the season was a wash, but I'm not holding that against him given the specific injuries that he had.
Yeah.
He's still expected to be, you know, who he is, and they're going to hit him with three downs. The offense may be better, which is kind of a little bit scary because it was pretty good last year.
Yeah. I think it kind of shows how good he is as well. That offensive line is probably one of the worst in the league too. Mm-hmm. It's not great at all. And McCaffrey still gets the workload, still gets the job done. And like the injuries, like you said, it took up to last year to stop him. Like, so yeah, I have no qualms taking him at number one in my league. So I'm excited to see him get back this year.
Especially these PPR, like,
yeah,
they, you know, he really, his backup is a rookie that has a significant injury history as well. So it's like, we know he's not getting pressed unless he's injured. So
yeah.
Could he have another rough season? Yes, it's obviously possible, but based on all the stuff that I've read and researched and what I know medical wise, I'm not ready to say that yet. it happens again this year, then that's a separate discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. So out of the four people we've mentioned, the only one that you're actually considering and you're buying in is Christian McCaffrey currently.
Correct.
Okay.
Which is good because I have lots of shares of McCaffrey.
But the problem is you have to pay up for him. Like, you're not getting a discount because of his bad last year.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yeah, sorry, but nope, you're not getting a discount.
Yeah.
I literally have like no shares of him. I just don't go after him because I don't know. It's just, he's always going so high. Like, you can never get him.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're 1, 2, 3, I mean, it depends on the settings of the league, but that's pretty much when he's going.
Yeah.
I've tried to use this injury against the other person to say, hey, he got injured. Hey, this, I don't know if he's going to be able to come back, but I mean,
won't be able to use it now after listening to Jesse. So
yeah, now they're going to keep him. They're going to be like, yeah, no, we're not getting rid of him. So we talked about our running backs, quarterbacks already. We'll move into our wide receivers. We're going to save Michael Thomas. We already mentioned him multiple times. We're going to save him a little longer. We're going to talk about Odell Beckham and Cortland Sutton. Wide receivers are known for getting torn ACLs. And Beckham tore his ACL week 7 in 2020 and Sutton week 2 in 2020. Sutton plans to play in at least one preseason game, and he says he feels close to 100%. And now Beckham, he felt good on his first day of camp, and then he was held out for rest and rehab on his second day, which was today. Both players seem like they're going to avoid the PUP list. So what's your thoughts on it, Jesse? Who has the slighter advantage, and who do you think might have a better chance to perform this year?
So... both, I'm not concerned about either.
Okay.
I wish Aaron Rodgers went to Denver. It would have been a lot easier for Sutton to break out, but it is what it is. OBJ is a genetic freak, period, in a good way. Okay. All these guys are, but he's really special. So he's had his fair share of crazy injuries, and unfortunately, this adds to it. But... when you look at the underlying data from last year, he was starting to finally come around, and Baker was kind of starting to also do something, some good things. So the offense really hasn't changed really much at all. And their offensive line is ridiculous. I think it's number one, or if it's not, it's top three. So
yeah.
I'm not worried about pocket breaking down or anything. And if you think back, which players, which wide receivers have tore their ACL recently and came back, almost all of them have been pretty good. Like Cooper Kupp, dude, didn't even look like he missed a step. He got maybe a little fatigued at the end of the year. You know, the numbers dropped a little bit at the end of the year 2 years ago, but Keenan Allen years ago tore his. I mean, out of the majority of the guys, they did really well. So this is not, unlike running backs, which is a completely separate discussion, tight ends to an extent are also a separate discussion, wide receivers for the most part do really well. So I'm not really worried about either of them. OBJ, I think, has more potential only because of the environment around him. If Teddy Bridgewater ends up being the QB in Denver, I think that's a better fit, at least in terms of reliability. Locke may have a better arm, you know, in terms of depth, but... I mean, you think about all the different weapons that they have in Denver that they're probably going to want to share. You got Judy, who's a monster. He's got stupid skills. I mean, you have Williams. You got Melvin Gordon. You got Fant. You got Patrick. I mean, they have Hamler still there. Like, they have other guys. They're probably going to want to spread the ball out. We know Sutton's the alpha. But... if I'm putting my money on one of them, it's close, but it's probably going to be OBJ. Okay. But I'm not overly worried about either. I wouldn't be surprised if Sutton plays the majority of the preseason with a brace on. That's actually pretty common. It's a mental that's part of the mental thing. They don't trust it yet. So that's what I'll say. I'm not overly worried about either.
That's good news.
Yeah,
go ahead, Fernando.
No, I was going to say, yeah, I actually bought Odell Beckham because I'm actually expecting him to break out this year.
That's what I was going to ask. Jesse, is he high on Odell now, especially saying you're not concerned? Because I think a lot of people feel like he's you know, I know he obviously got the injury, but wasn't doing a whole lot the last couple of years, you know, there in Cleveland, kind of letting people down. What do you think now? This could be a season.
I think it has the potential. If Baker can break out like some think he might, this will be, OBJ will definitely be one of the main causes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would say he's kind of in that 20 to 25 range for me right now. It's going to take a lot for him to get him in the top 15. Oh, like, yeah. You know, like, you're going to have to beat both Rams wide receivers. You're going to have to beat the monsters at the top. You're going to have to beat some of the sneaky guys that are going to get tons of volume, Devonta Smith, that are just like, I can't expect that much volume out of you. Yeah. So that's why right now, like, I don't think I can put him in my top 20. But between 20 and 30, I think there's definitely a case there.
Yeah, that's where I have him. I think I'm about 25, 26. Also, he's got, you know, Baker's on a contract year, so that's probably goes for him too. You know, he wants to shine, get the big money next year. Like, yeah. They're saying, like, it's going to be in around the Russell Wilson range. He might want more, you know, if he has a good season.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, you have got both of those wide receivers in Seattle's offense, so both of them should be top 20. I mean, so yeah. The problem with the top 20 is that there's like 30 guys. So yeah, it's like somebody's got to fall out. You can't have 30 guys in the top 20. So it's just like, where do your fall? You know, how does Washington play out? You know, where does Curtis Samuel fall? You know, so there's a lot of guys that you like. You just have to kind of pick who you think's going to break out and maybe who you either has injuries or just doesn't get the love that we were hoping he was going to.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Odell Beckham finally break out in Cleveland because, I mean, I think that would be big for both Baker and everyone. I don't know. I'm more leaning on Sutton breaking out more than Odell, though, only because they've been saying that Judy is that top guy now, that the top corners will be attracted to him more versus Sutton. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, Judy is special. Like, mm-hmm. He was training down here, and that dude runs unbelievable routes. Like, he's so precise. The rate limiting factor is the quarterback. Like, you know, we saw Teddy Bridgewater last year hold down three top, 25 receivers or whatever it was, with between Robbie Anderson, Samuel, and DJ Moore. So it's like, we know he can do it, but I don't know who's throwing him the ball, you know. That's the troubling part.
Yeah, I think it has to be Teddy, really. I don't get where people's confidence are coming for Luck. You know, like, what did you see last year that would say he was going to improve this year? There was nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They got Teddy for a reason. There was rumors about Rodgers when things were bad. You know, it has to be Teddy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, unless, like, Luck, either Teddy gets injured or Luck does unbelievable stuff in preseason, which is possible, I guess. But, you know, this is hard, you know? This is hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now move on to someone that you mentioned twice already in the episode before even mentioning him, and that's Michael Thomas. I mean, Michael Thomas, he was the top dog as a wide receiver. He finished wide receiver one in 2019, and he finished top 10 in all of his seasons prior. And in 2020, he played only seven games. And he finished wide receiver 93. He was placed on the PUP list on Monday, and he underwent ankle injury in June, and he could be out 10 to 12 weeks when the season comes around. He may be looking at maybe five games he's missing, up to five games at least. And I know you already have a story for us, Jesse, so I'll let you already dive right into that.
So, Michael Thomas. Here's what we know about Michael Thomas. I have a full extensive video of several, but the final one is kind of the most clear one. How did this play out? So here's my little model. What did he do? He was blocking. Got rolled up on the left ankle like this. What happened? This medial part, inner part, gave out. This is the deltoid ligament. probably the strongest ligament in the body, or one of. It's a combination of ligaments, but then he suffered the dreaded high ankle sprain, which is a combination of this huge thick ligament here and across the middle here. This by itself is awful. CMC, Kamara, Saquon, a lot of people suffer this. Awful injury, period. But that's not what concerns me about him. It's the deltoid. We never hear about the deltoid because of how strong it is. Whenever someone rolls their ankle, it's almost always laterally, because this thing is so strong, this gives out. These ligaments over here are really weak. They love to get injured. Scar tissue is weak, gets injured again, and you just do it over and over again. But when you injure the deltoid, bad, bad. So when they decided not to do surgery in the middle of the season, because that would have been season ending, okay, fine. He never looked really good when he came back. They gave him more time, did really nothing in the playoffs. And knowing what we know now, I don't blame him at all. But what was released last week or whatever week it was by Nick Underhill, one of the beat reporters for the Saints, was astounding and blew my mind. He went to a team doc, a doc in January, February. We don't know exactly when. I don't know if it was a foot and ankle specialist. I don't know. I don't even know who it was. And they said, let's rehab this ankle, come back in a month, and then we'll decide whether or not you need to do surgery. Well, however it was conveyed, whatever was said, Thomas didn't follow that. So he did whatever he did. Rehabbed on his own, whatever. He ends up going back or going to Saints training camp, early stuff, and gets evaluated by the team docs. And they're like, this is bad, bad. You need surgery bad. This is a 4 to 5 month surgery. This is not a quick surgery. But here's the part that we missed. If they did the surgery in March, he's ready for week one. But also think about all of the things that may have injured or worsened the ankle injury from March, April, May, June, July. All of those compensation patterns, all of those new injuries that possibly have developed for him trying to rehab an injury that needed surgery. I don't believe that Michael Thomas will ever be the same player that he was before this injury. It's that bad. If I have him in Dynasty, whatever I can get for him. Whenever he comes back, I want nothing to do with him unless he's like a 12th round pick or something like that. I can't trust his ankle.
Wow.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah, that was not what I was expecting. Wow, that was... Wow. So you don't even think he's going to be really wide receiver, top wide receiver relevant, maybe even wide receiver relevant anymore.
This is a hard injury to come back from. Really, because whenever you cut, that's the ligament that is going to protect your ankle from rolling inward. So if it's not stable, or the sutures don't hold, or you get rolled up on again, guess what? You're going backwards. So the reason why we don't hear about it is because it's really hard to injure. So, and then he's going to start developing arthritis. He's going to start having inflammation. This is going to be a hard thing to come back from. That, and I hate to say it because he's been a monster, but I have a feeling this is not going to end well. I hope it does. I hope it ends beautifully, but
it's not looking good.
No.
Yeah. Sounds pretty similar to what we're talking about with Marlon Mack and Cam Akers. Probably want to see it before we actually trust it. And for fantasy anyways, damn, I got too many shares of Michael Thomas I got to get rid of now.
Yeah, I didn't even, I just drafted him in a couple of dynasty leagues because he just fell to like the 10th round. And I was like, oh, this is a good draft pick for Michael Thomas. He might be able to come back and do really good. But now that that was said, I don't know. Now I might be starting to get rid of him.
Yeah. What's surprising with the Saints is they're not even trying to go out and get, you know, like a
no. Top they signed Chris Hogan. Anyone.
You know, Chris Hogan that was playing lacrosse or whatever. Like, so I don't know whether they're overly confident about this. You know what I mean? And
I mean, we already saw how this played out once.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we don't even know who the quarterback is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
They have Kamara. They have Tre'Quan Smith, they have Troutman, and then they got a couple of lesser guys.
Deontay Harris, too.
Yeah, he's a fast little guy.
Yeah.
But I think Pomfrey's there, a couple of guys. But, like, so is that great for Kamara? Is this going to be a Taysom Hill run every other play game? Like, is Troutman going to potentially break out because he's going to get so much volume because no one's there to get any other volume? Like, I mean, I honestly think he's probably going to miss at least a month. And you could probably convince me another 3 weeks because I think their bye is in like week six or something. So it makes sense to bring him back after that.
Yeah. It's just an offense full of question marks really at the moment. And we're not getting any clear indication about anything at the moment.
He was a steal before this.
Yeah.
But I also assumed he had surgery early, at least one. I thought he might even had two. But now we hear this. This is like the worst case scenario. Honestly.
Yeah, the timing for the surgery just seemed crazy.
And I
Sean Payton the other day saying whatever, you know, he wasn't happy about it. So,
oh, of course, there's not. I mean, what does he say? There's like, there's nothing. There's no good answer.
Yeah, that's it.
I was wondering why he had surgery in June. Like, you were already injured last season. Like, why didn't you get the surgery or anything before? Like, you could have healed in the off season, and you would have been that top wide receiver again.
I mean, I think there's a couple factors to it. I treat a lot of these guys. I see pros, most of them are away now, but in the offseason, I saw probably one a day or several a week, we'll put it that way. The circle of trust for these guys is really small. So you can't burn their bridge. If they don't like what you're saying, or if things didn't work out, you'll never see them again. And there's a good chance you might not see another player again. Unless they don't have a choice. But like, so if he didn't like what that doc said or the way it came off or the lack of explanation or whatever, it really could have been anything. That's all it takes. And these guys just going to go on their own little thing, you know, and they're all in different places. In the offseason, you don't know where anybody is. Nobody. You have no idea unless they post it somewhere or you just happen to physically see them. That's the only way you know where they are. There's no organized activities. Everything is just random. So he's probably chilling in the islands or, you know, on vacation or I don't know. But obviously he wasn't working out to the extent that he could have because he really wasn't able to.
Yeah.
So hindsight's 20/20, but this is bad.
Yeah. If he had come to you at you know, early part of the year, and you were as blunt as you were kind of there with it, do you reckon he would have taken that in the wrong way?
I'm really crass. Like, this is how I am with patients. There's no sugarcoating because that doesn't get anywhere. You know, and that's the way I feel about it. But if guys come to my office, it's usually because one of the other pros referred them. So or their trainer that they really trust referred them to me or in my group. So I would have been really, I mean, I do this and I do it for a living. So I know both parts of it. And those guys have crazy injuries that we don't even know about. Like we know 10% of all, 15% of all the stuff they have. It's crazy. But I would have been really, really direct with him. And I know because I love the game and I understand how they think to an extent, I can't do what they do, but I understand how they think. I can explain it to them in ways that they appreciate, and whether or not they decide to bite the bullet and do what I'm recommending is up to them. That's a lot of the times out of my control. Cause I mean, I'm talking about procedures that are 10, 15, 20, 30 K. Like these aren't like cheap things. So with the levels that these guys like and the quality that they like. So sometimes they see that even though they make millions, they're squeamish about that. You know, they'd rather have a party than spend 20 G's on their knee. I'm telling you, I've seen it all the time. So it's hard. These guys, it's kind of weird on the other side.
Interesting.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, sure, you can have a party and all, but like, what makes a difference if you don't get it repaired and then you can't play football again or baseball or basketball or anything?
When these guys realize, and it's usually their mid to late 20s, that their body is their ticket to making the money that they're making, they get it. And they finally start doing preventative, or at least treatment appropriately. But until that, they think they're invincible, because gifts alone have basically brought them the whole way, you know? And then they finally get it. But some of the guys are still in party mode.
Yeah.
You know, they think that they're invincible, and they think that they're not going to get injured, or that they're going to heal so fast because they're used to healing fast. But, you know, there's a lot of things that we use that make them heal fast. And sometimes if they don't do it, they're like, well, what happened? You know?
So maybe my question to you is, do you think Todd Gurley, who got arthritis, do you think there was any chance where he could have stopped that and been able to still be playing his elite self?
His injury stems back to college.
Yeah.
When he tore his ACL, reportedly he had a bad meniscal tear. That is what derailed him. The ACL and the severity of the meniscus, which when you remove that much meniscus, you're adding additional stress and torque to that knee, and you're going to start severely compromising the articular cartilage, the protective layer around the bone, and that starts to wear down much faster, which is what starts arthritis, which is essentially what ended his career. So he would have had to have been really aggressive regularly to prevent the cliff that he suffered. But a lot of guys don't think that's going to happen. You know, they're like, no, like, I've been a freak my whole life. That's not going to happen. You know, and then the problem is, it happens and it's too late. You can't reverse certain things. It's like, I can prevent it from getting worse, but I can't reverse it. It's easier to fix when it's mild. When it's severe, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, it's like it's all fun and games until it truly happens and then reality hits.
We actually had a player, my partner had one, I think it was last year or the year before, 2 years ago I think it was. So we evaluated him. He had a really severe ACL sprain. His ACL was really loose. And he was there for another part of the knee or somewhere else. I don't remember what it was. And he told him, he's like, you really should consider tightening up this knee and tightening up this ACL. It's really loose. He's like, nah. Tore his ACL the next week.
Oh my goodness. Now, how long would it have taken him to, like, repair, not repair it, but, like, if he listened to the doctor, your friend, if he listened to him, how many weeks would he have been out to save that injury?
Depending on what we put in there, two, a week.
Wow.
I mean, it would have been, like, 20 G's, but, that, you know,
but
20
I mean,
G's a year, yeah, like, yeah. For these guys...
Pocket change, you know, for these guys, come on.
Yeah, right.
You know, but the hard part is they don't think that we can't see the future per se, but there's certain connections we can make that we see this leads to this more often than not. But they don't know that. They didn't study this their whole damn life. They don't see patients with this every day in very similar manners. So yeah. They just know, oh, I'm fine. I deal with bumps and bruises every day. This is just another one. And it's hard to convince them that this isn't just another bump and bruise. This is a big deal, you know?
Yeah. Because to you guys know the data and you guys have learned the data. So you guys know everything about the data. And all they are is, oh, I'm good. It's just a little tweak.
Yeah. And then sometimes they even think that especially when they see the prices, like, oh, they're just trying to get my money. You know, that type of thing. So they're like, oh, no, like, you know, I'll hold off. So it's like, I see it, but unfortunately, it's challenging. It's a very challenging road.
I mean, I'm sorry, but if you're making at least $1 million, $20,000 is like nothing.
Especially if you're making it because of your body.
Exactly.
And now you can't use your body because you have a severe injury that may impact your whole career. You know, ACLs do well, but some of them don't. You know, Carson Wentz still hasn't looked the same, in my opinion.
Nope, not at all. And I mean, we can move on to our minor injury, Calvin Ridley, who had a minor off-season foot surgery. Now, do you think that was minor, or do you think
I have never heard any details that I'm aware of. So I'm not overly concerned. It was probably a little cleanup. A lot of the times there's a little fraying inside of the joint, so it's not overly concerning. You know, Amari Cooper is kind of in the same boat. But overall, I'm not super concerned. He played through a ton of injuries last year, and for the most part did ridiculous, but he was on the field for the majority of the time. And now he's expected to be truly the alpha. And I'm here for it. I still think he's top five. You know, the tides seem to be shifting. You know, one week everybody's like, oh, he's top five. And then they kind of back off on me. You know, maybe he's 5 to 10. And I think it's swinging back to top five again. So, but I mean, he is going to get stupid volume if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, he's top five for me all day long. I was just more worried about that. You know, players that have foot surgery in the off season tend to start slow sometimes. And they're not great early on in the season. There's been a few of them, and with the lack of news, like the Falcons just came out and said nothing more or less about his
That's the problem is that I don't have any information either on there, even personal information. I have zero information on it. So it's hard to speculate because it could be something major and it could be something truly minor.
Yeah, I think Amari Cooper sounds worse. Anyways, just by what I'm hearing, anyways, so he's not mightn't even be there for come back a preseason or something like that. That sounds a lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, I there's a little bit more concern for Cooper, who has been able to stay really healthy for the past several years, even though he's got this injury risk tag that kind of hangs over his head that isn't really true. Is he the best wide receiver in his own offense? Is a separate discussion. But overall, I'm not super concerned with Cooper, but there is a little bit of concern there.
Okay.
So circling back to Calvin Ridley, he's still 3 first round picks, whole 9 yards. He's still a whole buy.
Yeah. No worry. Rock and roll. Top 5.
Yeah.
All right.
That's good. Confidence there. I have him at 4, so I'm good.
Yeah. All right. No concerns. I mean, I think so. Everyone's assuming. And this is a little indirectly answers that question, that Stephon Diggs is just going to repeat 2020. Who's to say that Josh Allen doesn't regress a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a direct correlation.
There was reports that Josh Allen was still looking like Josh Allen from where he left off and where he picked up. I forget who the report was, but...
The report was that Emmanuel Sanders also looked very good, and he could take over a lot of...
I mean, I actually spoke with a couple Bills players this past offseason, and they basically told me plan A, plan B, and plan C is get the ball to Diggs. Like, seriously. And as a fantasy fan, you could see that. It was like, literally, that was their goal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious what happens with Moss, with Singletary... You know, what happens with Davis, Gabriel is kind of sneaky. Mm-hmm. Emmanuel, you know, I'm not ready to get rid of him yet. I still think he's got a little bit of life left. So, I mean, I think they have a little bit more potential this year. And, you know, Diggs has been able to stay healthy. But I mean, I just don't know if everything's going to go as perfect as it did last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we're going to go to our last segment, which I ask all my guest stars this, and there was actually really good news for me anyways today. Not so much for the players themselves, but Lynn Bowden's outlook. I mean, I'll go through the whole 9 yards with you. He scored over 10 points last season, the last 3 out of the 4 games last season. Jalen Waddle, you were just mentioning before the show, he tweaked his ankle that he suffered last season, and he only played 6 games last season in his last college career. Will Fuller got banged up today, I heard, as well, and he's always had a routine of injuries with the ACL tear in 2018, and he really has the problem of his hammy issues. He's always having hammy issues. I mean, he played 11 out of the 16 games the last 2 seasons, 53 out of the 80 in the last 5. That's about 66% of the games. And now we move on to Devontae Parker. Devontae Parker, he's now on the PUP list with the he's known for a hamstring injury. And his only one good season was when he played the full season and he finished 11th in PPR format. And now our last guy is Preston Williams. Preston Williams, who is now also on the PUP list, and he's played 16 out of 32 games. I mean, Lynn Bowden, is he a buy? His ADP is still looking really good. I mean, you can get him really cheap. Maybe not so much after these news reports, but are you in on Lynn Bowden?
Important part of that offense.
Which one?
Gesicki.
Oh, Gesicki. Well, I was only mentioning the wide receivers, but Gesicki.
Talent is talent. You know, targets are targets. Whether you put a TE or a WR next to his name, they affect each other.
That's true. Right? That's true.
You know, but at the end of the day, Bowden didn't apparently do enough in Vegas. Well, I don't know if it was Vegas at the time, but to obviously, you know, stay there, right? He was traded, I think, sometime last season, even though he was a rookie, I think.
I think just before either the regular season or preseason or something.
Yeah, it was early. I remember that. But we knew he was sneaky in Vegas. And then, you know, so the talent's there. Tua was throwing some bombs yesterday or today.
Yeah.
I don't remember what day it was. Every day feels
I think it was yesterday.
But Fuller, if he can stay healthy, and there's some reports that he's a little banged up, I'm not super concerned about it. He is going to miss a game with the PEDs. Should be the alpha.
Fuller is.
Yeah, Fuller should be the alpha.
Okay. Okay.
Parker, Preston, and Gesicki are going to get love, okay? Parker and Preston are a little different, you know, the way that they run their routes. I really love Preston Williams. But ACLs, for the most part, they do well. But there is some skewed data in terms of how high you were drafted to, how well you do.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with resources and depth chart and a bunch of other stuff. But so, you know, I'm not ready to write him off yet. If you want a dart throw in this offense, I think that's a sneaky option. And really all it takes is, you know, 2 guys to get injured, you know, a guy, you know, Fuller to miss time with a hammy and then maybe Waddle with an ankle, hypothetically. And then you're like, all right, well, where's the ball going? Gaskin's going to get some. Malcolm Brown's going to get a little bit of love, but he's running. You know, Gesicki's going to get some. And then Parker and Williams, depending on how that shakes out, there should be more love. So I could justify it. You know, he may be that Swiss Army knife that they need.
Waddle going down might be, well, if he goes down, I know he's tweaked the ankle, but I think that's where they see maybe Waddle or Bowden in the slot.
I don't know enough about their route trees and their and that type of stuff to know where he lines up. Like, is he the X? Is he Z? Like, I don't think that way. So, but
I think one person that actually really concerns me, like besides all those injuries, is actually Hunter Long, the rookie tight end, because they drafted him, but he's not as great of a blocker as he is to a receiver tight end. So he actually concerns me, but my thought is that Hunter Long is a future tight end in Miami because Gesicki's deal is ending this year and they haven't extended him. We saw Logan Thomas just get extended, but where's Gesicki's deal? So I think Gesicki could be out the door in Miami and they could be moving to Hunter Long.
I've heard that Long has made some impressive catches. You know, and impress people, you know, some of the reporters on the sideline. It's early, you know, but still. You remember, if you looked at Tags' article recently, I think it was on Fantasy Pros, it showed breakout ages for tight ends. And it's a lot later than you think.
Yeah.
It's like 26, 20, 25 to, I want to say, 30, 29, somewhere around there. So a lot of these guys are 21, 22, 23. Like Fant, Hawkinson, like all these guys are young, Troutman. So it's like they still need time to grow. So it's hard to project someone when, like, oh, he's been in the league for a year or two. He should be already made it. Not with tight end. These guys take a while. You can't expect everybody to be Gronk. You know, Kelsey is a special freak. You know, you can't expect that. Which is one of the reasons why I'm so low on Pitts, because he's 20.
I'm also low on Pitts.
Can't even drink yet. Like, literally. Yeah. And I mean, he's a freak. There's no question about it. But if he's probably more of a wide receiver than a tight end. But either way, he's probably going to disappoint at the ADP unless he does something crazy. But overall, I'm curious to see how the Gesicki situation, because he's got talent. I mean, we saw 26 is like the age where the guys start breaking out. You know, Waller is a unique situation and Logan Thomas is a unique situation. So you can't really use those. But Andrews, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, they happen to be on the same team now, but that's the age where these guys usually truly break out. So Gesicki's heading there. I think he's right in that age range. So this could be his year, at least based on age.
And I mean, if he does break out this year, he's probably going to want to get paid too. So I don't think Miami's going to pay him.
The Dodgers just traded for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner.
The Dodgers got Max Scherzer? No way.
Live.
Yeah. It takes a turn because there was talks that he was going to the Padres. Scherzer.
Confirmed. Jeff Passan or Passan.
Woo! Wow.
I'm a baseball guy, so that.
Yeah, no, there's been a lot of trades today. God, a lot of trades.
Awful. I'm a Red Sox fan, so this has been a rough day.
I do see everything in the background. It's all New England. Yeah, I see Celtics, I was right, Brandon Cooks.
It's part of the culture.
Yeah. I'm from New England. I'm from New England too, so I mean, it's diehard New England fan.
You get it.
Of course. Well, Jesse, before we go, do you want to mention what you do at Fantasy Doctors and everything you do, all that?
Yeah. So first off, I'm a sports medicine doctor. I'm a sports medicine. I'm boarded in family medicine, and I see predominantly a lot of ortho injuries. Stem cell specialist to make it easy. But I that's kind of my target area here in Miami. Right now. I got like 3-4 different things going on. This thing over my left shoulder is TFD. That's the logo for our new app. That's basically like Twitter for sports, if in simple layman's terms, I'm about to start pushing it. It's pretty sweet. It makes everything at your fingertips and you can separate it by sport and crazy. So that's one thing. But the other thing, the thing I've been working on the past 6 months is the TFD injury draft guide. So I basically broke down pretty much every player you're going to consider drafting, at least for the first 10 rounds, and gave you a full performance profile and a full injury profile, went as far back as I could, broke down their injuries, gave you a summary, and gave you a risk score for like over 100 players. There's like over 120 videos in there. So that's only like, it's only $20. And we got a couple things that go along with it as well. So, you know, that's there. The Saquon Barkley profile is tagged on my Twitter. If you want to check it out to see what it looks like, that's there. So I've been really, that was most of my hard work, because you're probably not going to see anything that extensive, overall anywhere else. And there's a special edition with Fantasy Guru that has even more stuff that you have to get through them. But, you know, we've been working on that. And then I got a bunch of content coming out over the next, you know, 6 weeks or so as injuries unfortunately happen. There's a bunch of other stuff on the plate, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, I got the TFD right here. TFD. Yeah. It's great because you get to see all the news reports, all injuries. I mean, it's great to see. And you're always constantly talking about it, tweeting injuries.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little addiction. It's
how I keep up to date on my injury players.
Yeah, literally. I mean, Devers went down the other night, and I even looked at your tweet, and you tweeted – and you're like, oh, he went down possibly, what was it, a hammy, I think?
He went back and forth between hammy and quad. I don't even know if they ever said what it was.
Yeah, I don't even think they did. I had him on my fantasy baseball team, so yeah, I got to keep the tabs on him.
Yeah, no, so I go back and forth between baseball and football. Those are my main two. Baseball is just so exhausting because there's so many players and so many teams and so many injuries. It's insane.
And it happens every day, too.
Oh, it's crazy. And then this whole, without getting into it too much, you know, the whole vaccine issue with the players, and that's a whole separate discussion, but that's been a little controversial. There's no, you can't win that battle regardless of which fall way you sit and how, anything you say about it. So, but that, you know, I feel like it's my duty to at least comment on that and describe it and discuss that, some of the medicine part of it, because it does play a role, unfortunately. And I do know the inside scoop for a lot of these players who don't really want it, but unfortunately pretty much feel like they don't really have much of a choice or their life's going to be hell. But, you know, so some of that stuff I relay just because players really, they don't have, you know, I mean, you saw what happened to Nuke. You saw what happened to Beasley, even though his was extra crazy. You're going to get chastised if they talk about it. So. You know, I fall on their sword a little bit, even if I don't use any names, just to say, yeah, unfortunately, they're not happy about it, but they don't really have much of a choice if they want to make millions playing the game. So I use my channel for a lot of different things. I try not to be controversial, but it's the nature of the beast, I guess.
Yeah. And you guys can all go check him out at Dr. Jesse Morse. Jesse, it was a pleasure having you on. And of course, Keith, my co-host, always a pleasure having you on as well. Once again, my name is Fernando, and I am your host of Sports Time HQ. Join us tomorrow where we have NFL Network's fantasy analyst, Michael F. Florio.
Thank you, guys. Take care.